The Courage to Lead, Episode 6.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com.
All right, this is Coach Harlan with the IB4E Coaching Podcast, The Courage to Lead. Thank you very much for tuning in. I am in the studio. Well, actually, I'm in my studio, and my guest is in his studio because we're practicing social distancing. Want you to welcome, please, Ashley Stapleton. Ashley is a certified financial planner. He's been in the industry for 20 years. He partners with individual investors to create and implement strategies that work towards specific goals like planning for retirement, saving for college tuition. Ashley and his team will help you create wealth, live off your wealth, and leave a legacy with your wealth. Ashley has a bachelor's degree in economics and a master's of divinity degree in the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. Ashley is married, father of three girls, and I am lucky in that Ashley is my financial planner, but more than that, he is my friend. Welcome, friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. Coach, how are you?
Doing pretty good. I've been looking forward to this. I think this will be a lot of fun. I think people can learn a lot from what you have done with the financial planning and how you grew your business, and also the courage that you have shown in the growing of your business. So I definitely want to dive into all that and anything else that pops up. But first, I've got a surprise for you. I have some questions. Listeners, you guys may be familiar with these questions. The set of questions I'm going to ask was made popular on the television show Inside the Actor's Studio. The host, James Lipton, asked these 10 questions of every one of his guests before he turned them over to the studio audience. So, Ashley, if you're game, I would like to ask you these 10 questions.
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. Question number one, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word? Yes. Oh, boy. You know, it's probably rats.
Okay. Well, I do have a question later about the curse word.
That's also my favorite curse word.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Rats. Okay. What is your least favorite word?
I think can't. Cannot. I'm not a big fan of that one at all.
Love it. So, Ashley, what turns you on?
I would say my family. I'm very passionate about my family. I just enjoy being around them. I have three girls, a beautiful wife, and that gets my motor going. Really love that.
Excellent. What turns you off?
I get frustrated. Frustrated real easy sometimes with I can't is my least favorite word. Mm-hmm. People who say they can't, they don't see the potential really, and that's a turnoff for me. That's a big one.
I am right there with you. Absolutely. What sound or noise do you love?
Summertime crickets. Okay. You're just laying in bed. You just hear the chirp. It's such a pleasant noise.
Nice. What sound or noise do you hate?
Nails on the chalkboard.
That seems to be a popular one. For our millennial listeners, they probably won't understand what a chalkboard is, but, Google it. What is your favorite curse word?
Rats.
Rats. Number eight, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
So my dad was a carpenter. I enjoyed it. I used to help him. And so I guess you say attempt, but maybe revisit that one day. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Nice. What profession would you not like to do?
Medical professional. I'm no way.
All right. And finally, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I hope he says, well done, good and faithful servant.
Good job. And I'm sure he will. Ashley Stapleton, we will be right back with Ashley right after this message. So stick with us.
For a limited time only, you can get your hands on my proprietary Roscoe Framework, the best damn goal achievement methodology ever devised. Crush every goal, personal or professional, guaranteed. Check it out, ib4e-coaching.com/Roscoe. That's RSSCO, the Roscoe framework. ib4e-coaching.com/Roscoe. Get it now.
All right, and welcome back. We're here with Ashley Stapleton, certified financial planner. Ashley, how did you get started as a financial planner? What drew you into this business?
Years ago, I graduated high school. A preacher gave me a book called Life on the Edge. It was about Dr. James Dobson. And I read it basically just talking about, hey, what do you do after you graduate high school? I knew college was on the horizon, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so in the book, it basically talks about, you know, vocations, what do you look for? Also talks about the spiritual aspect of it. And so Jesus talked about money more than he did heaven or hell. And I like people, and people like money. And so that's what drew me into it.
Interesting. So right out of high school, did you start, or was it right after college?
It was, I would say, I got in the industry in 2001.
Okay.
So I started off as a bank teller, and just, I fell in love with it.
Really? That's awesome. I don't like numbers. To me, numbers are difficult. I can keep a checkbook. I can spell checkbook. I can put numbers in a column, line them up just perfectly. But numbers have never, they seem restrictive to me. I'm more on the creative side. You can't, I guess some people can fudge numbers. I don't like to fudge numbers, and I don't think it's right to fudge numbers. But what was it about the numbers and the finance and stuff that really drew you to that?
It's interesting, Harlan, you say the creativity side, it feels restrictive. I feel liberated. When I do numbers, and it's just so amazing to me. You talk about like compound interest, and, you know, Einstein, I think his eighth wonder of the world was compound interest. And so to me, I think there's so much freedom in knowing that little bits along the way add up to big, like a bigger picture later on in life.
Well, and you've helped us, definitely. You do our finances for us, and our stock portfolio is growing. So I know you absolutely, you know, help families like that. When you first got started, usually, like, I sold real estate for a while, the very first people that I worked for were family.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, where did you find your customers?
Well, Harlan, Coach, you know, I went door to door. When I first started with Edward Jones, people said I was crazy for making the move, especially going door to door. And this was at specifically at the company I'm at now, 8-9 years ago. Oh. I was like, I've got to do it. You know, I have to do it because I want to own my own business and help people. So how I got started is I literally would drive up in neighborhoods, knees shaking like crazy, and just went pounding on doors. I went to small businesses. Hey, how are you doing your retirement plan? What are you doing to save money on taxes? What, you know, the questions. But I counted. I still have my sheets to remind me of how hard I work. So I counted. I knocked on over 4,000 doors.
Wow.
And probably a lot more than that, honestly, but at least 4,000, and then several hundred small businesses. So it's just a lot of sweat equity, a lot of, I say kissing babies, handshaking kind of things. So the funny thing is I started in 2012 knocking on doors, and that was in the presidential election. And so people would think I was a politician and not come to the door. So that's kind of what, how I got started.
Wow. And from those door knockings, how many customers did you get out of that? And are they still with you?
Boy, that's a great question. I would say the rule of thumb was about 5% of the people. Okay. So I ended up getting about 80 to 90 folks.
Okay.
From that experience, it wasn't the best source of sourcing business, but it made me appreciate where I am now. And so a lot of those clients are still my clients today. There was this one street that I knocked on. It was they always told us to go, you know, go where the big trees, you know, fat squirrels are.
Right.
And I took that to heart. And literally, I think it was like 40 to 45 houses on this one street. I ended up uncovering about $3 to $4 million, and they ended up being my clients. And
wow.
Yeah, it's insane. It was insane. And a lot of people are always that question. You really met people and they gave you their financial information on the doorstep? I was like, no, not exactly. It was a process. I had to continue to go back. So meeting people at the door was easy.
Right.
But going back to them multiple times, that was actually a challenge.
It's always in the follow-up.
Yep. Right?
So about how many times did you have to follow up with them before they finally said, yes, here's my money?
On average is about 7 to 9 times. I remember one guy is about 15.
Wow.
No joke, I have people that I would follow up with for about 3 years before they came over. So wow. It's just that pleasant persistence.
Sure. So who did you learn from? Is there somebody in the industry that you look up to or maybe shadowed to find out how to do this?
There's a gentleman actually at my previous employer. His name was Rodney McCann. He would just basically share with me how his conversations would look like. Now, work ethic, things like that, it's a different business model than what I did, but how to treat people, how to ask good questions, and how to tell a story, like tell a story with a client or prospect, and be able to, when that person leaves, be able to relate that story to, you know, what you're doing. So he was very influential in my life.
That's awesome. And do you keep in touch with him? Is he still around?
I do. Yeah. He's wearing the wrong jersey still.
Oh no.
financial industry, but love the guy to death. We try to talk two or three times a year. We're trying to up it a little bit once every month or two. Yeah, I still keep in contact with Rodney.
Nice. And now you just opened your, well, not just opened your own office. You bought a building now for your office and you're building your team. Tell me a little bit about that. How's that going for you?
May I share a little bit about where I was to where I am
sure.
now?
Absolutely.
I don't have time for that.
Absolutely.
So 2018, a flood happened in my old building we were leasing. When I say flood, it was sewage. It was very, wasn't pleasant at all. And so we were homeless, essentially without a building for almost all of 2019.
Wow.
And it talk about curveballs being thrown at you. A lot of curveballs were thrown at me. I was studying for a test I had to take. I was doing all kinds of stuff. It was a crazy, crazy year. And just to be able to persevere through that, my office manager, she actually found this building I'm in now. And she sent me a text. Hey, what do you think about this one? And I was semi in the market to buy a building, but I wasn't gung-ho about it. So all I did was when she sent me the text, I looked at the price and I was like, well, that's a nice price right there. I like that. And again, numbers guy.
Sure.
And so I wasn't paying too much attention to the building itself. And I forwarded that picture to my wife and she said, actually, that's our dentist's building. And so I was like, how do you know that? She said, did you read anything else besides the numbers? Yeah. No, I didn't. So I actually looked at the name, and sure enough, it was our dentist. And I just had finished about a year long Bible study with him. I called him up and said, "Hey, man, what's going on with this building?" He said, I need to unload it. There's nothing wrong with it. It needs some TLC on the inside, but if you're interested, I'm interested." And sure enough, that's how it came about. And so we purchased the building, moved in. It was a year this past November.
Nice. So. Good job. And you're building your team. Your office manager is now one of your financial associates, right?
Yep. Yep. She's now a financial advisor. So she's been with me for 5 years. Great. And she started about 6 months ago in building her business. So
nice. She's in. Are you sending her out knocking on doors?
Well, unfortunately, right now we cannot do that. We are in a modified phase where we, you know, with COVID, we can't go door to door. She's missing the joys of going to neighborhoods.
He says with a big smile. So people that are listening to this after, hopefully in the future, 2020, we were hit with the COVID-19 pandemic. What did that do to your business? How did that impact your business?
That's a great question. When it happened, the unknown was out there. No one knew what the virus was going to be, is. And so I had to learn new technology like crazy. And not only learn new technology, but also my clients learn new technology too.
I bet.
And so we have, you know, adapt to change. You know, change is going to happen. We had to adapt. We did. So business was actually really good in 2020. It ended up being, I was up about 15% in total revenue. And then I got a ton of new assets in, which that's the name of the game in my business. So I was able to help Harlan 15 additional families.
Nice.
Not only that, I was able to help 4 families retire and retire well.
Nice.
And comfortably. So that's been really good.
That is awesome. Yeah, I was going to say you've been with a lot of these clients for a long time, so they're probably at that retirement age. Was it the panic of the pandemic that motivated them, or were they already pretty motivated in their investing and savings?
Yes. some were motivated by the pandemic. In one particular sector is the airline industry. They hit hard. And some of those folks, you know, they were on the verge of wanting to retire. Some were not even thinking about it, but the opportunity came up, and we just talked through what we could do, what they had already done. Talk about the cost of living per month and just planning and preparation. And so I was able to help several of those folks transition. And it's a really good feeling when you can help people say, look, you're good. You're going to be really good and retire comfortably and with dignity.
Absolutely. No, and that's the one thing that we appreciate when we come in to talk to you. You show us, here's where you are now. Here's where you will be if you continue on with this path. And we can play with the numbers a little. If you make this adjustment, this is what it could do. And I love that aspect of it. It really takes the fear out of it. It's like, there's a plan. Let's stick to the plan.
Yep.
That is perfect.
We had a call earlier today, Harlan, about that. And what people don't realize is retirement it's like the third or fourth most important day in your life. Mm-hmm. And the emotions behind it, the feelings, the sense of uncertainty, because you've worked so hard for so long for this one moment. And if I'm able to walk people through this process, let them know that you're not in this alone, you're going to be able to do it comfortably. That is such a gratifying feeling for me.
That's awesome. Now, in the introduction, reading your bio, you have a master's degree, Master's of Divinity. Was that something, is that within your family? Is that something you know, how did you come to go and get that master's degree?
Oh, so thinking about being a lawyer.
Okay.
And it takes about 3 years roughly to get your law degree. And in my personal faith, I felt the Lord say, no, you need to go get your master's in divinity. Basically, it's just some of my family call it Ashley's preaching degree, which it's a little bit more than that, but that's about what it is. So it just helps me learn and sympathize with folks. And walk again, Harlan, you know me, but those who don't know me, life throws you curveballs. So there's joy and grief. You have both those extremes. And everything in between. So I'm able to help people walk through that, whatever that might be, whether it's the birth of a child, a marriage, divorce, death of a loved one, and I'm able to do that. And seminary prepared me for that. And it's really helped me get to where I am today.
That's awesome. And you've seen what the market can do. What happens today doesn't necessarily mean, you know, what's happening down the line, right? You can, there are fluctuations,
oh, yes.
But stick with the plan. Everything's fine, right?
That's right. That's right. So statistically, you're going to have 3 years up, 1 year down, three up, one down. And what I tell most of my clients is faith, patience, and discipline. I read that through Nick Murray. That's not original at all.
Okay.
But faith, patience, and discipline will get you where you want to go. But you gotta embrace the downturns.
Right. And so what can your investors learn during those downtimes? What is the lesson you try to get them to learn?
The biggest is patience. Yeah. Patience to ride it out, to maybe even invest more. It's a great time to invest more. I always tell a story. When I was growing up, my grandmother used to take me to Belk, and I hated going. I mean, it was, you know, a little 5, 6, 7 year old kid, a little boy for that matter. And your grandma was taking you to Belk, and I mean, and I have bad allergies. So we'd always obviously get to the perfume aisle, and, you know, it was not a great experience for me, but I remember my grandmother would always go to the clearance aisle or the items that are on sale. And so I try to relate that to how the market is. So when the market's down, it may be on sale. If it's way down, it may be on clearance.
Nice.
So you're getting really good value for your money. And I try to help people learn that. And so far, it's worked out extremely well for me. And back in 08, 09, I say the crazy person. People would ask me, actually, what I need to do. I said, you need to buy, you know, a good mutual fund, whatever it was. And they just kind of looked at me like I had, you know, like three noses or, you know, four eyeballs. And
exactly.
But it was true.
So, and I that reminds me a lot of my business clients. When the pandemic hit, their businesses were impacted. The first thing they want to do is circle the wagons, right? Yep. They want to pull their money out of things like their marketing budget, their, you know, advertising budget. And I tell them just the opposite. No, double down. Put yourself out there. Let people know you're still here. Let people know you're still open. Let people know you're being safe for their benefit. And the ones that did, they actually, you know, saw an uptick. They actually made some profit during this time. Is it essentially the same with your customers?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's that fear of the unknown, but if you can have the courage to plow through that fear, you're going to be well rewarded later for sure.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
And you bring up courage, which is a perfect segue. Thank you so much. This podcast is called The Courage to Lead. Whoever I feel I am, I've declared that 2021 is the year of courage, specifically the courage to lead. What types of courage does it take to be a good, courageous leader? You showed amazing courage going door to door to grow your business. You've shown courage in the fact of standing. You have a plan, stay with the plan. Even though things look bleak, you have the courage to stand and go forward and to bring your people through. You have the courage to help build rather than hold an associate back. You are lifting her up and helping her build her business, everything like that. Where does that courage come from for you?
The best thing I can tell you, or the best way to describe it is, like, I really do want everyone I know to do well, and not to make much of me, but to make much of others. Not after my own interests, but the interests of others. And I want to make sure that, and that specifically with asking my old office manager to become a financial advisor, you see the potential in folks. You see the potential in, you know, wanting something more, but do they have the courage to step out of the boat, basically? It's that Peter and Jesus moment when Peter's like, hey, I'll get out of the boat. Well, not a lot of, you know, there are 11 other disciples in that boat. Peter said, yes, I'll get out. And so there's a little bit of, a lot of faith. Let me just put, there's a lot of faith in getting out of the boat. And so when I asked Stacy to do that, she graciously put me off for 2 years.
So how did you help her find the courage to finally step up?
Just a lot of conversations, and just to take the leap. I mean, I told her to pray about it. I told her to I pray for her. I talked to her husband. Had a few dinners with her husband too, and because it takes two anytime you're doing your own business, hollering, you know that.
Yes, I do.
And so for her specifically, you know, I could hear, you can hear and identify when somebody is like, hey, this would be a good fit for what we're doing in my business. And so she's done that. Now she's building her own book of business and may launch into her own building, but it's going to be a couple of years away. So we're still filling that out one day at a time, but I want others to do well. Like, I really do. And I think it takes a little bit of courage to realize that, that it's not about you.
Right.
It's about how you do well in community.
Exactly. And that's, actually, that goes into a couple different types of courage. The intellectual courage, which is the courage to realize that you can't know everything, that there are probably good ideas or better ideas out there, and you have to open yourself up to hear and listen to those ideas. The empathetic courage, to set yourself aside and help that person, right? Look at the things from their perspective, and you saw the potential, you saw the possibilities, but you also saw the fear and probably helped her through a lot of that to make that decision. So I know your faith is important. That brings a lot of courage for you and stuff. What would you recommend if you were talking to entrepreneurs? What type of courage do you think is most important for them to gain in themselves?
I would say, I think that social courage is just make a decision and move forward. It takes a lot of gumption to go, whether it's cold calling doors or on the phone or businesses. It just takes a lot of courage to do that. Sure. But the best thing about it, though, in my opinion, is once you do it, I won't say it gets any more comfortable for me now. If I have to go up to a door now, it's not that I'm comfortable going up to that door, but I'm comfortable knowing that fear is there, that I've already plowed through it.
Right.
And don't think, just do. Like that. When I first started Edward Jones, one of my mentors here, we get that process by analysis.
Sure.
And he just said, actually, write this down. Don't think, do. So yeah. I did. And so anytime I have this little, I need to call this person or whatever, just pick up the phone and dial.
Yeah. And there's a book. I forget the lady's name now, Mel. Something. She wrote a book, The 5 Second Rule, where basically there's something you have to do that you're struggling over, you're afraid to do. Just close your eyes, count backwards from five, and then jump. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and just dive in and do it.
I'd love for you to get me that book.
Okay, I will.
That's impressive. I didn't think about that. I didn't do that. It's just sometimes for me, it's just like, okay, let me just pick up the phone, because it's like that mechanics too. Like, it's like riding a bike.
Sure. Well, it's getting through that first one.
Right.
When you had that first conversation, you knock on the first door, you realize that people are not mean to you. They're not throwing things at you or anything. Even if they close the door saying, no, thank you, you survived.
Right.
They survived. Everything's fine. Go on to the next one. But it's that initial step. I think that's the hardest part. I know it is for me. My business coach tells me all the time, hey, you need to start making cold calls. It's like, I would rather go to the dentist without Novocaine than make cold calls. I just can't do it.
That's right.
Do it. So what kind of courage would you say comes most easily for you?
I'll tell you, the most that comes the easiest for me is the, I'd say moral and spiritual courage. Mm-hmm. Both of those highly, but I mean, spiritual, just I'm a man of faith. I love You know, I love the Lord, and I am where I am today because of Him. And then the moral courage is that, you know, if I'm not doing the little things well, that's going to show forth in my family life, in my friends, in my community, and certainly in my business too. So those are the two. Now you asked for one, but I felt like those are pretty equal.
Sure. No, and I think they're both really important. Right? The spiritual courage, definitely the moral courage to do what's right, even when nobody's watching, right?
Yep.
To do what's right. What type of courage would you say is more difficult?
I think social courage. You know, it took me a minute to really think through this. Social courage is the most difficult because I want everybody to like me. Yeah. I really want everybody to like me, you know, and so I tend to take a little longer with making some decisions to move forward. So that's a challenge that I see in my own walk, that I tend to make decisions a little slower than other folks because I want to make sure it's the right decision. Right. And I could certainly sharpen my sword when it comes to the social courage.
Social courage is tough for some people. And it's the way it's described in a couple of those articles, the social courage is to say what you mean, right, out there, even if it's not a popular type decision, you know, to say exactly what's on your mind. Now, I know some businesses, if they think something, they say it.
Right.
I'm a little on the other side. It's like I don't necessarily want to offend anybody on either side of whatever fence we're talking about. Oh, so yeah. I try to stay kind of middle of the road. You know, you have your decision. As long as it doesn't impact my life, I'm fine. Whatever you want to do is fine. But I can see that's tough. Have you ever maybe had a conflict with a client because of either your faith, your social standing, moral, anything like that? Have you ever had any, you know what I'm trying to say? I'll edit that.
No, I don't think I haven't. And I'm trying to think through, not that I haven't had conflicts with clients. I have, but it wasn't ever over like my faith or indecision, maybe some indecision. I want to say I'm not really indecisive when it comes to portfolios or, right. or investments, but the only time that I've had conflict with certain clients is that communication expectations. I've had issues where I've shared many strategies with someone and they don't make a decision, and they are more or less, you know, they don't feel like I've given them enough, I'm trying to say enough direction.
Okay.
Or I feel like I have, and so it's not a good fit. And, right. and you know, as well as I do, those aren't ideal folks.
Exactly. So, some people want information and they'll make a decision. Other people want you to kind of take them by the hand, lead them, or make the decision for them.
Right.
That's tough, especially when you're talking about finances.
You know? Yes, it is. And so you have to gauge what type of person you're dealing with. I have both, by the way. I mean, I have both, but generally speaking, it's when I've lost or when I've had a conflict and somebody's basically, I have to say this, fired me. It's just because that a lot of times it's a do-it-yourselfer who just wants ideas.
Sure.
And not that I'm, you know, I'm not sitting there just boasting or anything or trying to be arrogant, but that's usually what it is. I give you ideas and thank you. I'm going to go take my money somewhere else and I'll do it myself. And that's just how it's been for me.
And that's fine. And then how many of those people actually come back to you?
I had one.
Yeah.
One. And I think with a handful, I've had one come back.
Okay. Still, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Do you have your crystal ball anywhere handy? How long is it going to be before we bounce back after the whole pandemic thing?
Well, in terms of unemployment, pre COVID numbers, I think there were about 1.7 million continuous claims unemployed, but prior to COVID, now we're at about 4.2 million right now, continual claims, which is far better than we were from a year ago, but it's still kind of, it's not where we were. And so everything I've read says it's going to take a couple of years before we get back to pre-COVID numbers.
Wow.
and that's for unemployment, things of that nature.
Yeah. And then what are you seeing as far as the market? What's the biggest item to get into, the biggest thing to get out of right now? I'm looking for free advice if you haven't gathered that by now.
Well, yeah, Harlan, those are great questions. And I'm glad my crystal ball is broken and my tea leaves have been like dried up a long time ago. So, you know, right now, I think if you're in a, just make sure you're rebalancing your portfolio. That's all I can really lend myself to say right now, because I don't have a crystal ball.
Right. And stay in it for the long run, right? This is not day trading. This is long-term investing in your
future. That's exactly right. This is not GameStop and hedging. Exactly. And, exactly. We don't do that here. So.
Perfect. So if you could go back number of years to your just starting off, what lesson could you tell or give to yourself as a young entrepreneur?
Well, I'd tell myself, go after the bigger fish sooner. You know more than you think you do.
Love it. Love it. And I will take that as a win for all of us. All right, Ashley, this has been awesome. Loved having you on the show. How can people get in touch with you if they want or have questions about investing?
Yeah, call me, 770-251-8391.
Perfect. That is awesome. I will make sure that that is in the show notes, everybody, so you can get this. Ashley, thank you so much. And yeah, stay the course. Absolutely stay the course. And go for the big fish first. Don't waste your time on the little fish. Go for the big ones, right?
All right. The little fish are important, Harlan.
They are important.
But I would say go for the big ones.
Absolutely. Sooner. People want that low-hanging fruit. They think this will be easy. Well, you can do a lot of easy, or you can do one or two real big type accounts. And you're just as likely to get a no from the big accounts as you are from the small ones. So
that's right.
Go where it is. Look for the big trees and the big squirrels, right?
Yeah. That's right.
That's awesome. Ashley, thank you so much for this. And listeners, hope you enjoyed this episode. If you do, hit the like, make sure you share this with your family, friends, and colleagues. And stay tuned, because I'll have a lot more. This is Coach Harlan saying so long for now.